Hello, and happy International Men's Day. My name's Mike. You don't know me, but I'm here to show you how we celebrate International Men's Day. We do it by waxing lyrically into the void about what the heck has gone wrong with this world. Raise a glass, why not, and drink responsibly. Alrighty. So what we sometimes call the social contract is a rather controversial concept. Some of you are booing already, I know, but hear me out. It's the idea that we make certain sacrifices and compromises for the sake of some kind of greater good. It sounds suspiciously like socialism, and in the context of government, that's largely what it is. But in the context of the family unit, it's simply how the family unit works. Children get protection from their parents in exchange for obedience to them. Eventually, the parents get protection from their children in exchange for the time and effort they put into raising them. And the grandparents do what they can, the aunts and uncles do what they can, and so on and so forth. All completely free of charge. It's all rather happy and fuzzy and glorious, isn't it, comrade? I'm reluctant to call it a Marxist division of labour because it's a system that has existed since hundreds of millennia before Marx strapped it around his coiled sphincter and extruded it like a balloon animal with his own delicious farts, and decided the whole world needs to protect him and obey him. And then we come to the phenomenon of men and women, the highly controversial phenomenon of men and women and the duality of their existence, their respective roles in the unwritten contract of the family unit. It doesn't necessarily involve obedience, unless that's your kink, obviously. I'm not here to shame anyone, but generally it's more of a synergy. It does appear to be in our nature that women will sacrifice freedom for protection and men will sacrifice protection for freedom. Hashtag not all, yada yada, let's not make the perfect the enemy of the blatantly true. But men on the whole are more willing to go out into the wider world and take risks for the sake of expansion. Women on the whole are more willing to refrain from doing so for the sake of safety. Thus, they go together, hand in hand, or hand in glove, as it were. This is not a coincidence. It is obviously by design, whether you believe in religion or evolution, or both. Or neither. Actually, scratch the neither. We do seem to be up against people who don't understand how either of those things work. Of course, we're not entirely bound to our nature, but we are certainly guided by it. The existence of self-sufficient women and self-sufficient men does not change the overall yin-yang structure that keeps the species alive. Women are the inward force that brings us closer together. Men are the outward force that expands our horizons. These are identities, but they are identities that predate any symbolic language that we would typically associate with identity. They're the kind of concepts that even animals understand about themselves, despite having no way to articulate them. Is that a thick concept or a thin concept? It's kind of neither. It's the ether that gives rise to the material. It's a Higgs field concept. Never mind. So, as a thought experiment, imagine a world in which one of these forces, one of these innate identities, is severely curtailed while the other is hideously inflamed. A yin without a yang, an upstairs without a downstairs, black without white, fish without chips, etc. Imagine, if you will, what would happen if we artificially inflated our insatiable desire for protection at the expense of any remaining shivering wisp of a sense of freedom. Imagine, if you will, that we found ourselves under the tyrannical thumb of a capricious nanny state that cuts us off at the knees and watches us bleed out for our own good. As thought experiments go, it's trivial, isn't it? There's no imagination necessary. We appear to be living in that nightmare. And we're asking ourselves how on earth this sad clown world has happened. What has changed? To find the answer, we need to look into the past. Far back. The further back we look, the closer we get to what originally set us on this path. Anything else is just a symptom. Why are we like this? Is it because of social media? Probably not. That stuff is less than 20 years old. Is it because of centralized broadcast media? Probably not. That stuff is still less than 100 years old. Is it all because of communism itself and its aforementioned forefather? Possibly. Is it because of centralized governments in general? Maybe. Or was it the mass dissolution and ongoing destruction of masculine identity? How long do you suppose that's been going on? I put it to you, dear viewers, dear listeners, dear leaders, that it is longer than you think. Much longer. So long ago that we've long since forgotten what even happened. If you think it's wrong to claim that women are men, that the unique identity of adult human females can be erased and replaced with the identity of simply men, then do consider that this is precisely what happened centuries ago to weremen. You may not have heard the word wereman. No, it does not mean a wolf who turns into a human at full moon. It simply means adult male human. Just like man simply means adult human. At least it did once upon a time. Wifman meant adult female human, by the way. That signifier was not lost. It only changed pronunciation to woman. Ever since then, we've been basically been referring to adult male humans as human and adult female humans as human plus. And it has long been accepted as a perfectly normal and perfectly healthy way to approach things. I'm not sure if there was any pushback against this movement to strip adult male humans of their unique signifier and just call them plain or adult ready salted human. But if there was any such pushback, it did not prevail in that particular iteration of the culture war. We've resigned ourselves to defeat ever since. And here we are in the 21st century. We've breezed right past the eventuality that tabling a discussion on men's issues gets laughed out of Parliament. That was fun for a while, but alas, nobody cared. And now we've landed squarely at the point where we have a big old stink being kicked up about the possible potential erasure of women's identity. We now have two warring factions. In one corner, we have the intersectionalists, who are determined to destroy masculine identity. In the other corner, we have the conservatives, who are determined to save women's identity. Do you notice anything missing there? Notice anything a little bit asymmetrical about all this? What is a woman? It's a very important question. The question of our age, you might say. What is a man? Yeah, who cares? We've already erased that identity centuries ago, and we're fine with it. Just shut up and take the garbage out, bigot, and eat the boogs and live in the pod. Take it lying down from that beautiful ladyboy's throbbing appendage. Open your eyes and don't even think about thinking of England, bigot. And wherever else we might go from here. I'm not saying we should go back to calling us weremen. That sounds just as silly as spelling women with an X. It's just symbolism. At the end of the day, symbols are arbitrary and irrelevant. This is about aspects of identity that transcend language altogether. The linguistic shift from weremen to men was not the beginning either. It was just an early onset symptom of what was already happening. The planned obsolescence of masculinity. I couldn't tell you when and where it originated, but that is how it originated in this colour commentator's humble opinion. And frankly, one could have made an elementary prediction as to what would happen if we systemically erased the yin in favour of the yang, if we removed our sense of freedom in favour of our sense of protection. It's centuries later, and we're still having a culture war in which both sides are only concerned with protecting women. Yes, I realise that's the lucrative thing to do when it comes to optics, but it's never going to improve anything because it's not addressing the problem. It is the problem. We have authoritarian regimes, hysterical fear-mongering, haphazard lockdowns and rushed-out mandatory medical procedures, anything and everything that grasps at the illusion of protection at the total expense of our freedom. We could fix all of these issues, but all we're doing is treating the symptoms, sticking more and more band-aids on a patient who is still stuck upside down naked in a forest of thorns and poison ivy that stretches to every horizon. We can keep pruning the leaves and clipping the thorns, but the seeds will remain in the soil, and they will keep regrowing. We'll be playing whack-a-mole forever unless we address the true source of the problem, the head vampire, if you will. And we can't ask the government for help. That's like pleading for assistance from the stems of the poison ivy. The seeds of the problem are the men and women who have long since stopped caring about the needs, interests, and human rights of male humans. And so, on this International Men's Day, perhaps just to humour yourself, allow some alternative explanations to grace your conscience. Just for a day, see if you can look past the symptoms. For instance, it's not that men are alone because of pornography and video games, it's that men resort to pornography and video games because they're alone. Have you considered that? Maybe women wouldn't be called sluts whose purity has been soiled by men if men were not considered impure. Maybe women wouldn't be sluts if men were not considered impure. Perhaps the reason most of the economic migrants flooding into the country are fighting-age men is because the country they came from doesn't want them either. Because it's not just here in the West where men are considered intrinsically impure. It's everywhere. Have you considered that? Maybe young men would be less inclined to resort to crime and violence if they had access to positive male role models, especially their fathers. Perhaps the reason so many fathers are not raising their children is not because they don't want to, but because they are not allowed to. Maybe the problem is not toxic masculinity, but an absence of masculinity. Maybe the problem with this generation of men is not that they haven't been punched in the face, it's that they have. Physically, mentally, spiritually, every which way, over and over again. Maybe women's problem is that they haven't. Imagine if I had said that sincerely. You probably already imagined it just now. Jokes aside, you probably felt your knee jerking into some righteous indignation at the notion that women would need to be punched in the face. Now see if you can extend that reaction in defense of all humans. Imagine the outside possibility that violence against men is just as wrong as violence against women. The notion that women are an oppressed class, and always have been throughout history, comes with the corollary assumption that men are the oppressor class. Sometimes it's explicit, but it's always at least implicit. And when people sincerely believe this notion, this conjecture, that human gender is and always has been a pervasive vector of human oppression, it's hardly any wonder that they would try to abolish it altogether, to erase gender entirely from men and women and children. And if you can scream and squawk about the tragic erasure of adult female humans while you continue to give zero dams about the erasure of adult male humans, then you are existing in just another cycle of the same paradigm. It's difficult to do anything else. It's difficult to even see outside the paradigm because it's what we do. Animals have a hard time behaving beyond their evolutionary niches, even after a severe shift in environmental pressures. When chimps see something they don't understand, they break it. When bonobos see something they don't understand, they have sex with each other. When humans see something they don't understand, they protect the women. Truth be damned, morality be damned, science be damned. If we so much as get spooked by a dragonfly, we instinctively shriek, "What about the women?" We grab the nearest male by his ankles and we use him as a fly swatter. It's how we got this far as a species. This is the sword we live by, and unfortunately it is very probably the sword we will die by. But it doesn't have to be this way. There is something unique about Homo sapiens. And it's not the homo part. It's the sapiens part. Wisdom. When we really put our heads together, we are able to notice patterns. We are able to predict patterns in the future, and we are able to confront the pitfalls and shortcomings of our animal nature. As a species, we are capable of genocidal degrees of violence, but we have taught ourselves not to be genocidally violent. We're capable of quite nefarious levels of dishonesty and deception, but we have taught ourselves to seek truth and to express it. We can overcome superstition, we can overcome tribalism, we can overcome revenge, cruelty, generational warfare, even disco? Is it really beyond the scope of our abilities if we can come to terms with what an aggressively gynocentric species we are and see if we can overcome that too? One step at a time, though, eh? Maybe we can spend one day a year pondering on the importance of masculine identity, reaching down a little bit deeper and rescuing some small scrap of it from the abyssal swamp of forgotten wonders. Happy International Men's Day. All the best, all the worst, and everything in between.